Thank you for downloading this program from the BBC. This program is part of World War One on the BBC. For more information, go to bbc.co.uk/ww1.
They sent me a letter, the letter from the War Office, and all it said was, "Dear Madam, we regret to inform you that your husband has died. He was sentenced for cowardice and was shot at dawn on the 16th of October. They were the exact words. That was all I got. What did I do? I got hold of that letter and I had a blouse on at the time and I pushed it right down in my blouse, so petrified I was, as anybody saw it. And I should have gone up and told my mother, but I didn't want to tell her. I didn't want nobody to know what happened. And they did not know until my pension was stopped at the end of the 6 months. Then they all knew I hadn't got a pension and I had to tell them the reason why. Because they wanted to know why I was looking so ill and how upset I was. And I had to sell them.
Soldiers serving in the First World War knew what was expected of them. To obey orders, stand their ground, and if necessary, fight to the death. But the intensity of this industrial conflict was unlike any before. Hundreds of young men, after witnessing the mechanical or chemical slaughter of so many of their comrades on the battlefield, were unable to cope, were traumatized, or ran away. This presented the army with a problem. It was certain that men who deserted had to be punished to prevent a widespread collapse in fighting spirit. Psychological explanations were less widely accepted than they would be now. Shell shock was recognised as a condition in 1915, but during the course of the war, 306 men were accused of cowardice or desertion and made an example of. Some were repeat deserters who showed no sign of shell shock, but some were as young as 16 and possibly in a state of mental collapse. Private Harry Farr was executed for cowardice on the 16th of October 1916. Gertrude, his wife, spoke to the BBC in 1993 and revealed the impact it had had on her life. Suddenly widowed, grieving with no explanation of what had happened, she had a young daughter to look after. And after a few months, no income whatsoever.
When I went to the post office, 6 months was expired. I went there and she was a lovely lady. She knew me because she knew me from a little girl. I went in and said, "I'm sorry, Mrs. Farr," she said. "There isn't any money here for you this week." I said, "Why not?" No, she said, "You really should be on your pension now, dear," she said. "The allowance will be stopped and you're now a war widow with a war widow's pension." So I said, "Oh, I see." I kept looking in, still no money. I had to go to the Soldiers and Sailors Orphanage for help. The post people told me to go there. "You go and see if you can get relief," they said, "dear. You haven't got any pension come through yet." Well, then I got this letter from the War Office saying, "Owing to the way your husband died, both you and your daughter are not eligible for the pension." That's all I got. And that was all I heard from them. Nothing more.
After a court-martial, those deemed guilty of cowardice had their sentence confirmed that evening by Field Marshal Sir Douglas Haig and were shot at dawn the following morning. One officer, Maberly Esler, was interviewed by the Imperial War Museum in 1974 and recalled an occasion when it fell to him to carry out military justice.
"The colonel sent for me and said, 'I have a very unpleasant duty for you to perform. Apparently one of our men, our own men, had absented himself from the front line on two occasions when a battle had started, and after the battle was over, he came back and made some excuse that he'd mislaid the way. They court-martialed him and sentenced him to death by a firing squad, and the unpleasant task the colonel set me was to attend the shooting and to pin on his heart a piece of coloured flannel so that they'd give the marksman something to fire at. The firing squad consisted of eight men, only two of which had their rifles loaded. The other two carried blank ammunition. That was so that they wouldn't actually know who had fired the fatal shot. Following morning, he was shot at dawn. He had his hands tied behind his back. He was put up against a wall. His eyes were bandaged, and the firing squad were given the order to fire. I dare say in the Second World War, it didn't happen so much. They were looked on as shell shock cases instead of being just, as they were, cowards. And I think it was a necessary punishment.
The chaplain that was there when my husband was shot wrote to the vicar at our church. He said, I was with him when he was shot, and tell his wife he was no coward. A finer soldier never lived. And then he told me that when the firing squad came to fire the shot, he refused to be blindfolded. He wouldn't be blindfolded. He stood open-eyed, watched what went on. When the vicar came to me from the chapel, he was horrified. He said, to think they sent you that letter, he said. How awful.
Essential. It was setting a bad example to the men. They were beginning to feel that you only had to walk off during a battle and then come back afterwards and you escaped any penalty of death or mutilation. It was setting a bad example. It must have happened.
Gertrude Farr found work in service as a housemaid in London with her daughter. She was left wondering what had happened to Harry, how and why.
Did he write to you very often?
Well, when he could, you see, when he wasn't out in the trenches.
Did he say anything about what the trenches were
like? No. No, didn't. No. Oh, no, just had a field card saying on active service. The letters I did have were from the nurse in the hospital at Le Havre.
And why had the nurse written the letters?
Because he was unable to. He was in hospital ill. Naturally, all she said was, I'm just writing to let you know your husband's here. And she kept me informed if he got worse or better.
And you must have been very worried about that.
Oh, I was worried. First of all, I was pleased when I heard he was in hospital. And I was looking forward to him coming home on leave, but he'd never got any leave. That's what the annoying part was. He was sent straight out of that hospital to the firing line.
There is evidence that Harry was physically unfit to carry on fighting. He was on record as having suffered recurring mental illness. He'd been hospitalised 3 times for shell shock. It seems likely that he could not face carrying on. To this day, the names of those executed for cowardice or desertion don't appear on war memorials, and many have no grave to visit. There was a great sense of shame and stigma for families left behind.
Did you talk about it to anybody else?
No. Nobody knew. I wouldn't tell anybody.
Why was that?
Well, I don't know. I thought it was so terrible, I suppose. I felt I was on my shoulders, all that stigma.
Did you ever try to find out where Harry had been buried?
He had no grave, apparently. Nobody knew. The chaplain in France did all he could for me.
The secrets and shame echoed down the generation in Harry and Gertrude Farr's family. Their daughter Gertie didn't find out how her father had died until she was 40, when an aunt told her, assuming she already knew.
You can imagine, as we all would be, very shocked, and because I always felt that as a little girl, I used to say the Germans shot my dad. But they didn't, did they? They didn't do it. You know, it still hurts, doesn't it? My great-grandchildren, and they're very proud to have a great-granddad as he is, even the little ones of 6, you know, wouldn't think that they would understand, but they do. They think it's terrible.
What do you feel when you see, for example, on Armistice Day, when they all parade on Armistice Day?
Don't tell me, don't mention it. Nobody knows the feelings. I could not describe them. I feel absolutely dreadful. And every year as it goes on, I feel worse and worse. Because I look at all those men that went through it and came home, the old veterans, and I think, well, my husband should have been there amongst those men.
In 2006, Private Harry Farr together with all those shot for cowardice, was pardoned by the British government. After years of hard work by campaigners, his daughter prominent among them. Back during the First World War, however, senior officers were absolutely convinced that this awful final sanction was required to prevent units disintegrating in what was the greatest war in British history. If the German guns couldn't find them, British ones would. Men followed their officers into battle, thanks to a powerful cocktail of pride, loyalty, passion, and fear.
A lot of people did do it, but didn't get caught. It could be done like this. You see, you go over the top. You're supposed to be attacking a certain position. There's a heavy barrage falling when they're getting wounded all around you. There's a deep shell hole just nearby, and you drop into there. Well, of course, in all the excitement and that sort of thing, and nobody would notice you really, you see. You could get in there and wait till it died down and then say you got lost or something of that sort. We used to be paraded, the whole battalion, after we got out of the line, and almost every occasion that one of the officers would read out a statement to the effect, Private so-and-so absented himself from the regiment from the 10th of March to the 14th of March. He was court-martialed, sentenced to death, and executed on the so-and-so. That's how it read out. Every time we came out of the line, and that was about every 2 or 3 weeks, we'd hear that a man had been shot for failing in his duty.
How did you react to that? How did the men react to that?
We thought it was all right. I mean, you've got to realise that there's two sides to that question, because if men had thought that they could get away with clearing off at the critical moment, then you couldn't possibly run a war like that, you see, because there'd be so many doing it.
Oh, I did see him once before he went to France, that's right, just the once.
November 13th, or something like that.
Yes. I never saw him anymore.
And that was only for a couple of days?
Oh, yeah. Never saw him anymore.
And that was that?
He went out and he never come back. He was out there 2 years. All I know is they left me without a penny. That's all I know. After he's gone, I was penniless. Never had anything at all.
What did Harry look like?
Oh, very smart, very good looking. And very happy, very pleasant. Curly hair he had.
And what colour eyes?
Green. Green eyes, they called them, you know, just army papers. It was supposed to be green eyes, they looked like more like a deep grey. They weren't green, but that's what they put it down on his army papers. He got green eyes. And I used to look out the kitchen window and I'd see him on the opposite side, and I used to say to the lady, can I please go and post a letter? I didn't want to post a letter, I was a naughty girl, just to see him. And I used to run down in my cap and apron and just say hello and have a word with him and come back.